If it was Kershaw tipping pitches, CJ, how does the hitter see that and take advantage?
Well, first and foremost, Chris, if it did happen, it always happens when the pitcher is in the stretch. Rarely can you pick up pitches when a guy is thrown from the windup, and that's what we saw in that seventh inning.
I know that post-trade deadline trades don't happen very often, or at least big ones don't, and that's why the whole Justin Verlander trade was kind of a big deal last year. But judging based off the last two seasons, nothing is sacred anymore, and everyone can just get traded after the deadline. There are no rules at all anymore. Josh Donaldson, a former MVP, just moved like 3 weeks after the deadline. Can you explain to me why this happens?
I really can't, honestly. And frankly, this is like one of those rules in baseball that like I don't really get, and I also don't really know how to explain to people, you know? It's like, so yes, there is a trade deadline, but for the month after, you can still make trades, but
so
only...
So it's not a trade deadline.
So it's not a trade deadline, but you can only make trades with players, with teams who claim the players, and you don't actually have to make the trade. So it like it's a very convoluted system, and I don't really understand why they do it. But
they wonder why we say baseball is not accessible to everyone. You have to understand what revocable and irrevocable claims on players are.
Yeah, it's bizarre, man. So here we are, September 1st, and Josh Donaldson is a Cleveland Indian. And sadly, Andrew McCutchen is a New York Yankee.
Yeah, I suppose the non-waiver trade deadline is technically what it's called, the first one that
right.
we're referring to. Yeah. But I don't have the time to say all that. I'm a busy guy, Alex. Right. So
that should be your pitch to Rob Manfred. You'd be like, I need you to make one trade deadline because I don't have time to say all the different variations on your dumb waiver, non-waiver trade deadlines.
it seems like way more intuitive to have it in one clean cut. Like it doesn't have to be, I don't know, baseball's so like laden with policy, I feel like.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be like that. Let's just have a trade deadline and then anything after that, you're shit out of luck.
We're streamlining the game, man.
Yeah. You know us. We're all about efficiency here. So yeah, you said it. Josh Donaldson to the Indians, Andrew McCutchen to the Yankees. And basically everything is bad. I hate seeing a guy like Andrew McCutchen in those stupid pinstripes.
It's gonna be weird, man. And he posted the selfie of himself yesterday with the shaved face, and I was like, this is just bizarre. He said, I don't know if you saw Lindsay Adler's tweet that he said he wanted to make sure his kid would still recognize him after he shaved, so he like held him as he was doing it.
That's iconic. I didn't see that tweet, but I'm glad that you brought it up. He looks 15.
He looks like a kid.
He'd be like, Mom, why did I get a second brother? Andrew McCutchen's kid would say that.
Yeah, exactly.
I still think he looks good, but it's disappointing that I now have to root against him. Although, it's not like I was rooting for him when he was on the Giants. It's not like I'm a big Giants guy.
Yeah, but like I'm rooting for him as like a guy, right? You know, I want him to get that ring. I'm happy for him.
You think, I guess, yeah. Well, he does. Empirically and objectively speaking, he has a much better chance of getting that ring now.
Yeah. I don't know if it'll happen, obviously, but like...
Of course. I came across a tweet from like a year ago or whatever, from a couple days ago, when the Mets traded Curtis Granderson post non-waiver trade deadline to the Dodgers. And I was like, sent him off. Go get that ring, my sweet son.
Well, speaking of which, Granderson got traded too. He's a Brewer now. So
is it everyone?
Yeah, right? And so is Gio Gonzalez. Bizarre, man. The rich get richer.
Can we talk about how the Brewers are... we actually don't have time to talk about this, but can we talk about it as a phrase that I say too much? So can we talk about how the Brewers are actually really, really good? Aren't they at first? And Christian Yelich is like NL MVP good?
Yeah. We didn't even write this into like the schedule, but Christian Yelich hit a freaking cycle. So that's fun.
Six for six.
Shit. Yeah.
MLB posted something about, I think like... Matt Carpenter, like a video of Matt Carpenter hitting another home run or something like that and being like, is he going to be the NL MVP or something like that? And I was like, please don't ever personally attack me ever again by saying anyone other than Jacob DeGrom deserves to be NL MVP. Why don't you just tag me next time, MLB? Yesterday at work, I turned to everyone that was sitting near me, and everyone was just kind of quiet doing actual work. And I turned to everyone, I was like, guys, I have an announcement to make. I'd like to mark today as the day that I start my Jacob deGrom for NL MVP and Cy Young campaign. If you need any information about this, I will have pamphlets ready on Monday as to why he deserves to be NL MVP. Okay. He's having a better season than when Clayton Kershaw did it. So let's do this. I'm in. Starting the campaign now.
You want to make your pitch right now? You want to take 30 seconds to make your case?
No, because it's like really statistics like heavy, and we have a lot of stuff to get to later, but just he deserves it, man. Throw the guy a fucking bone. What a year.
why does DeGrom deserve the MVP? Because, man, just look at it. Look at what he's been through.
To be fair, he has been through a lot.
Oh my God, absolutely.
No, I don't. Now's not the time to make the pitch, Alex. I'll save the pitch for when the voting gets closer.
So yeah, follow BWags1121 on Twitter for your day-to-day DeGrom for MVP campaign.
Honestly, we could make some social media, some cards, some pictures of stuff, some pamphlets to pass out on Twitter.
Yeah,
on the Tipping true. Pitches account. It'd be a nice little campaign for us. Look at our
official endorsement.
Look at us socially influencing.
This message was approved by the Jacob deGrom for MVP pack.
Yeah. Do you have much to say about your former son, Josh Donaldson, moving to Cleveland?
No, he's a dick. So like, I don't really care.
Yeah. Like, you excommunicated him from the family, right?
Yeah. Not a fan anymore. I was talking with my mom about this, but like, he was even kind of a dick on the A's. So like, whatever. I hope he finds what he's looking for, but I personally won't be a part of that endeavor.
Yeah. Cleveland is ridiculous.
They should be so much better than they are. I don't understand it. Like, that's my unprofessional analysis of this, but like, look at how many good players they have. Why are they not good?
That's really unprofessional analysis. Excellently done.
Thanks.
That infield, though, I made a joke from our account that they're adding a former MVP third baseman to an infield that already has two current MVP candidates, and the Mets have fucking Jose Reyes, Wilmer Flores, and I don't even know who, Jeff McNeil, who's been great, but like, they called him up from AAA this year.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's my life right now.
Things are good.
That's my life. Yep, things are great. Todd Frazier, the Todd father.
Yeah. But you get your weekly David Wright update that he's not back, but is hoping to make it back soon. So you got that going for you.
Dude, David Wright is really just saying, fuck it. And he's doing the thing where he's just willing it to happen by saying like, I want to play. I intend to play this year. And then he's just like, balls in your court, Mets.
Yeah.
If you're not going to play me, then I'm just going to continue to tell the media, who absolutely adore me, that I want to play. Like, yeah. The media eat that shit up.
That's a good strategy, man.
Yeah, it's a solid strategy. He's not an idiot. He's been around New York for a while. In typical fashion, we bantered on for longer than we wanted to in the first 10 minutes of this podcast, and we're going to get to some actual stuff later. But before we do, I'm Bobby Wagner.
I'm Alex Baisley.
And this is Tipping Pitches, presented to you by the Jacob deGrom Pack for MVP.
And presented to you by the loud Latin music that's coming from my basement as well. So if you hear that intermittently throughout the podcast, just know we put it there definitely on purpose, just for like a little mood music to get the mood going.
It's to remind you that Alex lives in New York City, and what comes with living in New York City is crazy ambient noise that you're never ready for.
Yeah, but it keeps you on your toes, right? That's the fun of it. You never really know when you're going to get woken up at 1 a.m. by music.
It is a kind of eerily quiet in LA, especially since I live like out in the suburbs now.
Yeah, that's weird. It's always weird for me when I go home and it's like deathly silent at night. I'm like, I need people like out on the street yelling or something like that, you know?
Yeah, fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
Couples fighting on the stoop. Love that. Love that. Our old apartment is back up for rent. Apparently the people that moved in after us didn't do
not
well
a fan.
No, not a fan of that spacious backyard where they knocked the fence down and pushed the construction up to 6 feet away from the door.
Yeah, I wonder how that old building's doing behind us. I wonder if it's done by now. They're supposed to finish this summer. One day I'll go back and check it
this
out.
This is what people come to the pod for.
Yeah.
This absolutely. Is now a housing podcast. One day I'm going to go back, I'm going to listen to every episode, and every time we've said this is now a blank podcast, I'm going to do a super cut of that. It's going to be like 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
This is now a basketball podcast.
I was going to say, it's going to be 80% of like us saying this is now a basketball podcast.
True.
Can you tell me about what the hell JD Martinez is up to though?
I don't even think that I can.
If you had put the line of number of times we say the word Hitler on this podcast at one before the season, like I probably would have taken the under on that.
And well, yet, you would have lost money now.
And yet here we are.
First of all, I just want to read this headline from Deadspin because it's fantastic. The headline is JD Martinez follows in the footsteps of Red Sox greats like Curt Schilling. So in the recent series of people unearthing old social media posts by Major League Baseball players, it came out this past week that JD Martinez posted on Instagram this time. So it wasn't Twitter. So Instagram now back in the race for most toxic social media platform, at least Tipping Pitches' most toxic social media platform. JD Martinez posted a literal photo of Hitler. It's a literal photo of Hitler with a quote overlaid over top of it that says, "To conquer a nation, first disarm its citizens." Would like to point out two things about the quote. Number one, not actually a Hitler quote, pretty sure.
Yeah,
from what I've understood of the situation. Number two, wrong form of its.
First disarm it is citizens. You're such a fucking editor, dude.
I realize how petty that is, and I realize that nobody cares.
That's the problem with this post.
Yeah, that's the problem with this post. And JD's caption to the meme that he shared, which is, that's actually what Instagram was for, sharing Hitler memes.
Yeah.
But JD's caption is, "This is why I will always stay strapped. Hashtag the truth."
Oh, man.
There's a lot to unpack here, Alex.
There is a lot to unpack there.
Do you want to get the ball rolling on unpacking this, or should I?
Well, it's just weird. You know, like I'm looking at it right now and I don't really know how to wrap my head around it. Like ostensibly, it's anti-Hitler. So I guess that's a good thing. That's the first step, is that he's in theory, what he thinks he's doing is using Hitler's verbiage to explain why he needs to hold on to his guns.
Yes.
So here, let's start with this. It could be pro-Hitler and it's not. So that's a very good thing.
Okay. We've cleared the bar that's on the ground. Now let's move up to a higher bar.
That's
we're not
going to
clear any of the other bars. Exactly. My first feeling when I saw this and I sent it to you on Twitter, I like saw someone tweeting about it and DM'd it to you. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And you were like, is he pro-Hitler? Is he anti-Hitler? And then we thought about it more. It's anti-Hitler for sure. We've now gone over the line of Hitler 10 on the betting line so far on this podcast.
Yeah.
But my first thought was like, in order to argue for your gun rights, you need to be sharing pictures of Hitler everywhere on your social media account.
Yeah,
weird look, just, my guy.
It's a very weird way to make your argument, you know? Like there are so many better ways. I kind of got to give credit to him because I don't think I've ever seen anyone do this before.
It's a bold choice.
He said that when he posted it, the Second Amendment was like definitely a hot topic, which like, first of all, it still kind of is. So like,
you
would probably still post this meme today, but all right, bro. But yeah, just really strange way to make your case, man.
Yeah, it's a really strange way to make your case. And also, this one hurts, man. I didn't know anything about JD Martinez personally. I've obviously read a lot about him as a baseball player and whatnot because he's like one of the best hitters in baseball. But I wanted to like him.
Yeah.
I wanted to. I he's a really handsome guy. He hits the crap out of the ball. All other things being equal, he'd be a great guy to root for. And now it's over. So JD Martinez, you're officially on the Tipping Pitches shit list.
I know. Yeah, he didn't
Deadspin
even like...
Deadspin has a list of all the things. It says, as Martinez said at the end of his presser, he doesn't want to talk about politics. This is referring to the presser that he gave after this resurfaced and he had to kind of defend himself or whatever. And then M-, love a good M-. Maybe because it'll reveal that he's a big fan of Fox News and Donald Trump. And then they're all like, all those words are hyperlinked. And it's like different hyperlinks to his Twitter likes, which are all Fox News opinion pieces and Donald Trump tweets and MAGA tweets and all that shit. And I'm like, God, how did this go undetected for so long?
Yeah, right?
How did Tipping Pitches, the official podcast of the baseball left, not know about neo-Nazi J.D. Martinez? Right there.
Yeah, we got to, I guess, make that our job now. It's just start combing through athletes' accounts.
Yeah, let's do it. Just expose these people. I actually don't want to do that. That doesn't sound fun.
That doesn't sound enjoyable at all.
We're making an effort. You and I, or at least I, and I think by proxy you, are making an effort to be more positive when it comes to baseball. Trying to look for more positive things. We've had a really depressing season of Tipping Pitches.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, transitioning out of the Hitler Instagram post segment, we're going to take a quick break and then talk about Aaron Boone and good and bad rule changes.
The moment I wake.
So there's a lot of arguments on Twitter and in articles and from talking heads about what makes a good manager in 2018. Because, you know, these analytical front offices, they just put in their guys, you're going to listen to everything they say, blah, 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 blah. AJ Hinch, even though they won the World Series, whatever. And Aaron Boone is like the star child in the middle of that Venn diagram. Basically, everyone loves him because he was in the booth and I guess was nice to everyone and like played, and he's a very gritty, played the game the right way kind of guy, but also he's been able to transition to be analytical for the New York Yankees. I personally, and I feel safe in saying that Tipping Pitches doesn't really care about any of that debate when it comes to our favorite managers. I think the quickest way to becoming our favorite manager is to have an epic meltdown in front of an entire stadium. And Aaron Boone did just that, I think last night, right? Friday night. We're recording this on a Saturday.
Yeah, on Friday.
If you haven't seen, we'll post a link in the description and we'll tweet one out or whatever. He was arguing balls and strikes and he got down in a stance and showed the umpire where he felt that the catcher was catching the ball. And the umpire didn't like that very much. And Boone came running into the umpire's face and started screaming some obscenities that I will not repeat, even though I am a professional lip reader. And I don't know, man. He's got the title belt now. The Braves minor league manager had it last week, but Boone now has the title belt for Tipping Pitches manager ejection of the week.
Yeah, this is pretty wonderful. I love the manager that like feels the need to mimic the right way to like do for umpires to basically do their job, right? So for Boone to get down into the crouch and show him this is where the strike zone is, that's pure gold, man. You don't see that a lot. It's inspired acting, to say the least. Like, that's the kind of thing I just want to know what goes through your mind. Like, is it something where he had been thinking about that all game, where he was like, you know, if this umpire makes another bad strike call, I'm going to get out there, get into his face, and then get down into a crouch? Or was it something where he was like mid-yell in the manager's face, and then he was like, I know what I need to do. I need to fucking show him. And he just like got down in a stroke of pure genius, you know?
Oh, it is pure genius. I don't think that you can premeditate something like that. Because if you premeditated it, you wouldn't do it. Because you would think how stupid you look doing it. It reminds me of, I think I might have mentioned this on the pod at one point or another, but Bryce Harper, I think in like early Nationals minor league days, which didn't last very long, so it had to be at a pretty low level. It might have been like high A right after he got drafted. He got called out by notoriously terrible minor league umpires by one of them on a pitch that he took that he felt was very outside, and turns out on replay was very outside because Bryce Harper has a really good eye. And after the strikeout, after he punched him out, Harper walked to the opposite batter's box, drew a line in the dirt, and said that's where the pitch was. And then the umpire rejected him for it. I love this. I love the demonstrative ejections where they use the field as a prop. I think it's genius.
Yeah.
That's your sandbox, man. You got to make the most of it.
Yeah, seriously. It's like a blank canvas. What can you do with it, right?
Yeah, and all of the best ejections are all, they all use that.
Right. They employ some sort of device that involves the field. Apparently, Ron Gardenhire actually was so inspired that he went out and got ejected on his own later in the game, although in not nearly as creative of a way. It was pretty boring, honestly.
What surprises you about that sentence?
Nothing.
My favorite thing about arguing, I think an unintentionally good consequence of that rule change about how you're just not allowed to argue balls and strikes at all anymore, because that's been like the last 5 years, I think that's been the rule,
yeah,
that technically you're not even allowed to come out and argue balls and strikes. It's an immediate ejection. That's not the way that it always plays out because umpires run things however they feel like doing that day. But my favorite unintended consequence of that is that a manager knows when his team needs a jolt, and it's like a get out of jail free card, essentially, because you can just, you know, you're going to get ejected by going out to argue this. So you can premeditate it and kind of choose your spot the best. It doesn't actually have to be about a terrible call, because you can argue balls and strikes at literally any point in literally any game. And what's the umpire going to say? No, you didn't see the ball come in slightly outside. Like, I think it's fantastic. I'm so pro ejection. If I was a manager, I would try to get ejected.
Once every six games. Well, and so this is what we were talking about, and it kind of leads into our next conversation. What replay has done is it has drastically stifled the ability for managers to even come out and argue their case, right? And get into these swear-laced tirades against umpires and really get out there and kick the dirt. Because what are you going to do? Like, you're going to just sit there, like, as they're on replay, like, just kind of slowly kicking dirt on him more and more until, like, their shoes are covered? Like what's the most interesting that you're going to... Are you going to, like, get on a bus to New York and show up at the replay office and like yell at them, you know? Like once the, like they send the call to New York and then they make the call and then the manager's like, well, there's nothing I can really do about it because it was reviewed. And then he's just like, all right, I guess I'll just sit on my hands at this point. It's frustrating to say the least.
Get on a bus to New York. I don't think Aaron Boone's been on a bus in like 15 years.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Replay is soulless, right? And a lot of people like that. It's cold and cut and dry, and I think it's like a little too scientific. We've had that conversation. Maybe we can link to it or whatever, but there was literally a pod where we spent the first, I think, 22 minutes ranting against replay, and it was, I think, some of our best work personally.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure I used that as like one of my clips applying to The Ringer. So apparently The Ringer is anti-replay.
Yeah, we gotta keep a running list of like why it's bad, really. We should make that like a dedicated section on our website, like the case against replay.
I'm down.
Write a dissertation.
Every time replay messes up, yeah.
But this speaks to a larger conversation that we have many times on this podcast about what might be wrong with baseball today and what is right about baseball today. And it leads to, and not just among us, it has led to hand-wringing among pretty much everyone involved with baseball about like, what can we do to fix the game? Like baseball is too long. Baseball games are too boring. It's too slow. It's just this and that, or are strikeouts killing the game? Or, well, I don't know. We have discussed many a problem with baseball, problem in scare quotes. Mm-hmm. And this has kind of become a beat of ours. So of course, we have to talk about the piece in the Wall Street Journal from this past week titled "A Radical Pitch to Save Baseball."
Oh, you know what baseball needs? Radicalism.
Absolutely.
Everyone is so open to that in the world of baseball.
And obviously, it's going to be the Wall Street Journal leading the charge.
Oh, yeah. Hashtag Wall Street Journal, join the resistance.
The deck for this article is titled, "A Pair of Academics Offer a Dramatic Rule to Increase Competitiveness and Cut Almost a Half Hour from a 9-inning Game." So you ready for this, Bobby?
Hold on. Before you start reading, I want to say, I haven't read this article. I saw a lot of backlash to it on Twitter. I kind of know where it's going. Whatever. There's literally not a single word of that deck that appeals to me. Not one.
Nope.
A Pair of Academics. All right, I'm out. See you guys.
Oh, it's not even just academics. Guess what university one is a professor at?
Isn't it Harvard?
Maybe, but what's
is the other one NYU?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Obviously. That's so good. That's so good. Wow.
Yeah.
We are the most qualified people in the world to talk about this article.
We absolutely are. So the rule that they are proposing is called, this is so ridiculous. It's called the catch-up rule. And what it's very simple, and it is designed to basically give worse teams a better shot, because what they want to do is, I guess some people have a problem with like the competitiveness of some teams, and you know, there's a lot of talk about teams tanking and everything like that. So the point is mm-hmm. to close the gap a little bit, and it's a pretty simple rule. And so how it works is when the game is tied or 0-0, baseball is exactly the same. Nothing changes. But when one club takes a lead, then the number of outs that they get is reduced to 2. So if your team is batting and you score a run, then you now get 2 outs in that inning instead of 3. And that's it. That is the entire rule. You just, if your team is leading, the literal, like one of the fundamental rules of baseball just totally changes.
Wow. And they don't want to change like strikes, counts, anything like that, just the outs.
Nope. It's just, so if, you know, first inning, who's the Yankees leadoff hitter? I don't know.
Brett Gardner.
Not a good example. All right, Brett Gardner gets on, and then I don't know, whatever. Didi Gregorius or Aaron Judge hits a 2-run homer. Now the Yankees have 2 outs instead of 3 in that inning. You don't get that 3rd out. And the goal of it is basically just, I don't know, to penalize the team for being good. I don't fucking know, man.
You know what I think we should do? I think we should reverse the rule. I think the team that's losing should only get 2 outs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Backs against the wall, baby. What are you going to do?
I never, trust me when I say, I never thought that I would say these words out loud. But I do not need nerds who have never played the game before coming in and telling me how baseball should be played. I'm sorry.
Oh man, that is choice. That's a choice cut right there.
Yeah.
What are we talking about here? What is it? No. No. What? That's all I have to say. Like, what? This is not kickball in fifth grade.
Yeah.
This is Major League Baseball. It's been played with 3 outs as one of the fundamental rules for 150 years. What is it? No.
The author of this piece, Jason Gay, has a line in here where he says, "I know. It's simple, but jarring. I don't expect the old school types to like it. Baseball isn't a sport accustomed to big changes. People still fight about the designated hitter, and that rule was introduced in the Middle Ages." And
wow,
it's like,
at me.
Yeah, right? He's like, old school types? Like what? So if I just propose a rule, if I say I get to decide that some games just end after 7 innings, and if you don't like it, you're old school. Sorry. This is just the new school way of thinking. Like, that's not how that works. I'm sorry.
No, that's not how that works at all. I'm deciding that the Mets get to go to the World Series every year. That's it. It's new school, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. It's new school thinking.
New school, New York. Let's do it. What?
Yeah. Oh, so this is, it's bizarre. So like, what it does in their studies, it basically showed that if this was implemented, it would reduce the margin of victory by more than a run, and like 24 minutes would be shaved off an average 9-inning baseball game.
Oh, 24 minutes. Yeah, that's going to... Everyone who doesn't watch baseball and doesn't know anything about it now and doesn't like the way that baseball stamps out personality and is racist and homophobic is going to see that number, 24 minutes, and they're going to start watching. Guarantee absolutely. You this. Oh, they're going to get off Instagram. They're going to get off Twitter. They're going to get off Netflix and Hulu. They're going to say, what is this streaming bullshit? I'm going to go out to the old ballpark. 24 minutes? Wow. I'm going to pay $13 for an IPA.
Yeah. Oh, a 3-hour, 11-minute ball game? Fuck that. 2 hours and 48 minutes? Hell yeah, I'm on board.
Oh, yeah. Get me in. Get me in there. I got even less time. I'm going to spend less money on beer and hot dogs. I might not. I might only need to eat one meal at a baseball game instead of two. What is this?
This is just so dumb. And like, for what it's worth, like the writer tweeted this out and got rightfully ratioed for this because this is a ridiculous idea. And I don't think that anyone in their right mind thinks that this is good. But I do think that it speaks to this kind of fundamental idea of like how we look at the problem with baseball, especially when it comes to like competitiveness, in that we look at good teams and we look at bad teams and we turn to the good teams and we say, you're too good. This is not fair. You're cheating by accumulating these players and spending money. And therefore, we have to make you slightly less good to give everyone a better chance. And it's so ridiculous because why are we not turning to the bad teams and saying, you're not good enough. You're not spending enough money to put a competitive product onto the ball field. We need to find some way to compel you to be better. Like, making good teams slightly less good is not going to get anyone more interested in baseball. Like, hey, here are the historically good 2018 Red Sox. Now they're 20% less good. Do you want to watch now? What?
The Warriors, every time they go up by more than 15, they're not allowed to have Steph and KD on the court at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's new school. Steph's, if you don't agree, you're old school.
Steph's only allowed to shoot threes when the Warriors aren't up by more than 15. Tied. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I think like it's a very top-down way of looking at it, like a very top-down way of fixing competitiveness in baseball, doing like weird gimmicks to make competitive teams jump through loopholes as opposed to forcing the Wilpons to sell the Mets, you know, for example. Like, it's not that the solutions are there. Twitter figured them out like 8 years ago, dude. It's Jason Kay has written some stuff that I actually like, and I haven't read the article, so I don't want to say, but the way that you presented it, it wasn't his idea. He was writing about like a study, right?
He was writing about these two professors who just came up with this idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's clickbaity as fuck, and like, what, where were, it's 2018, even the Wall Street Journal needs to do some clickbaity stuff. But I'm sick of like writers being obsessed with this idea of like baseball needs to fundamentally change rather than like baseball needs to change the way that it talks about itself. Because I would love any writer to find me one person that doesn't watch baseball because it's 24 minutes longer and who would watch baseball if it was like under that magical 3-hour number that Rob Manfred like sits up in bed in cold sweats thinking about in the middle of the night. I don't think that's a thing. And I've never met anyone who thinks that's a thing. I've met people who like baseball because they grew up watching baseball and that's it. Or adopted it later on because of certain things, those certain things being they liked the personalities of Javi Baez, Francisco Lindor, whatever.
Yeah, they found God.
Yeah, they found God. They found a ballpark in their town that they really liked that's cheap enough to go to with their friends when they're like in their 20s or whatever. I've met a lot of people like that living in a city. And so if your solution to baseball's viewership problem or whatever, or baseball's age problem, which granted, those are facts. Don't get me wrong, that's a problem. And we rail against that all the time, that the reason that baseball is so white is because baseball is so old. But if your solution to baseball does not involve promoting those things that I was just saying, that the reason that people find baseball later in life, if your solution doesn't involve promoting those things, promoting personalities, promoting affordability and accessibility to games, then your solution to baseball is wrong. It's not actually a solution. You're not fixing a problem. You're making up a problem in your head and it's like you're strawmanning the hell out of that.
Okay, hear me out. This rule change is actually good because it would make the old white men so furiously angry that the game is changing that they would just disavow it completely. And we just rid them of the spore. Like this is just like, this is like the toxin that you need to drink just to like wash out the stuff from your body. And then baseball can be reborn anew and we can just get rid of the, just get rid of the rule again. And we've got rid of the toxicity.
That's a take for sure.
Yeah. Like 12 dimensional chess right there.
Here is my counter to that take. If you did that and got rid of all of the toxic white men that watch baseball, baseball would be ultimate frisbee. That's how relevant it would be in the culture. Because no one would be watching it.
No. Yeah, there is literally zero magic bullet like rule change that is going to quote unquote fix baseball. It's not, the on-field product doesn't have a problem. Like the game itself, there's not an issue there. It's all at the top, man.
There's no 3-point line for baseball. There's no shot clock for baseball. It's not happening. Like,
yeah,
those things fix the NBA. But like, guess what? Different sport, different type of sport, different goal. You run around in a diamond. You're not trying to go side to side fast as you can. Yeah. It's just a different thing. It's like jazz versus rock or whatever. It's just, we're not talking about the same. It's not in the same time key.
Yeah, you want to force baseball to be more watchable, more interesting, more competitive? Force the Blue Jays to call up Vladimir Guerrero Jr. right now, today. Force the White Sox to call up Eloy Jimenez right now, today, instead of manipulating their service time and keeping them down so they can pay them less money down the road, right? Like, these are the real problems. You think people don't want to watch baseball? There are these stars who are tucked away in minor league stadiums because MLB teams are too cowardly to actually spend money on them. That would be
Peter
so
Alonso,
much fun.
David
that
Wright.
That would be so much fun to watch, and I don't understand it.
Truly, I don't understand it either. You want to have people watch baseball, single cam on Francisco Lindor, 100% of the game.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Just give me a tight shot of that smile. I'm watching that all day, but that's better than the Oscars red carpet. I'll write a blog post about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we've done all this rant before. It's important that we address that rule change in that Wall Street Journal piece. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Marlins again, because apparently they're the official closeout team of Tipping Pitches now. We're going to end every episode talking about them. So for this next segment, Alex, I'm really excited to let you know on the fly that we're going to be joined by Mr. 305, Pitbull, Mr. Worldwide himself to talk about Miami, his hometown city.
Oh my God.
That's literally my dream, is if Pitbull were to join us on Tipping Pitches to talk about the Marlins. I would have to, we'd retire the pod after that. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
If anyone listening knows Pitbull, make it happen.
No, oh, knows him personally.
Yeah,
if Pitbull's cousin listens to this, just let us know. Hook us up.
If Pitbull's cousin listens to this, then we're successful in life.
Yeah,
we did everything we wanted to do with this podcast. We're mailing it in for the rest of our lives. No, what we're here to talk about is the Marlins did another cool thing, which is really refreshing. You know, we dunked on the Marlins a lot before this season started, and by the grace of Derek Jeter, they're just coming through in the clutch. At home games next year, the Marlins are going to do a thing where they're going to encourage fans to bring musical instruments, flags, and more to Marlins Park next year in a newly named outfield section called Comunidad 305. 305 obviously being like the, I guess, area code of Miami, phone area code, right? The season tickets will start at on an average of $8 a game for this section. It'll be out in right field. And the quote from Chip Bowers, who is the president of business operations, is, I guess I'll just read the whole thing. He said, "We really embrace the heritage around baseball and the heritage around people from Hispanic culture. So bringing that same mentality we saw around the World Baseball Classic, we've seen around EPL games, MLS games, in and around the U.S., how do we get that engagement buy-in where people can proudly support their love for the Marlins and also for their particular culture?" So this is like out of a playbook of things that Tipping Pitches has ranted about wanting, you know, when we've talked about the KBO, we've talked about baseball in South America. We've even talked about a little bit of a World Baseball Classic when, you know, like when Lindor hit that home run in his home country. And so full stop, 100% love this. There's not anything that I don't like about it other than the fact that people are going to be playing terrible music. Probably people are going to use it as an opportunity to say, buy my mixtape. But other than that, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I just imagine still no one showing up except for like one guy with a bugle who's like playing taps in right field as while the Marlins lose like 7-1 to the Indians or something.
Wouldn't you go just for this though? This is like an attraction.
Yeah.
I think like I would go if I had like a band or something or like a, you know, like a brass band, I would just like go with my whole band and buy tickets for a whole row and be like, hey, let us have this half inning and we'll just crush it. And then you guys one row up can have the next half inning. I don't know. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, totally. It is embracing like the Miami culture and everything like that. And it's trying to cultivate, if you, you know, even if your on-field product, if your team that you're putting out there is not the most watchable at this point, trying to get the fans into it is really interesting. You know, I mean, in a way, it makes me think of the A's stadium and like the right field bleacher creatures who are like out there every game waving the flags and doing the drums and everything like that. And they've, you know, kind of built up their own culture in a sense, which is at this point more or less sanctioned by the team. And so trying to build and engage your fan base in something and be like, hey, like you're actually a part of this, right? Like we want you here is really cool. And I guess my only hope is like that they don't stop doing this a few years down the road when slash if the Marlins get competitive again, you know, if they don't say, all right, well, we had fun with this. This was cool, but like now it's annoying that we're drawing 30,000 people again. We got to cut this out. You know, like this is something that could very much be become a part of the fabric of the stadium. And, you know, I hope it remains that way.
Yeah. It just goes with the vibe, right?
Yeah.
It's Marlins Stadium in a very figurative sense is loud as hell, right? Like the artwork in center field, all the bright colors, right? There's a pool. It's not loud in the literal sense, but maybe this will help that because there are no people there usually. We talked about when you went and you gave your little report from what it was like to see a game there, and they don't even open up the second deck. So that's rough. Maybe this will be a reason for people to come out and watch. In conjunction with the thing that we talked about last week was that the Marlins will now require their English-speaking players to also learn Spanish as opposed to just requiring Spanish-speaking players to learn English. I don't know. Two things pushing the culture in a literal sense, not like organizational culture. The culture of that franchise forward. And we got to give credit where credit's due, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
that old Jeets, you know, slapping it the other way. Love that.
I mean, we talk a lot.
Diving at a grounder in the hole. Look at him go.
We've talked a lot about like the KBO or like the Japanese Baseball League, just about like the way that they get their fans so into the game, right? Like they are such a part of it. And this is just a step in that right direction. I don't think they're necessarily doing it for all of the right reasons. It's not like a winning team is doing this sort of thing. I think this is more, this is in part a way to get fans out to the ballpark at all. But, you know, it's a step in the right direction. So we'll take it.
I'm in. If Pitbull ever performs live in Comunidad 305 in that little section, I'm going. I'm flying in. Booking the next flight to Miami.
Now, tying all of this together is, like you said, our main man, Derek Jeter, who is, I think at this point, might be the mascot of the pod now that Tim Tebow's been ushered off into the distance with the end of his season. So
yeah, we could do that. We can make the ending section about Jeter every week. There's apparently enough news now.
Yeah, your weekly Jeets update.
Yeah.
The deets on Jeets.
Ooh!
Yeah, there it is.
Bring that heat. I was going to try to make a pun off the captain, but that's way better.
As longtime listeners will know, we skewered a piece written by Tom Verducci for ESPN earlier in the spring for basically writing an entire fluff piece on Derek Jeter. And but you know, you really can't squeeze out enough profiles of the man now that he's running the Marlins. So ESPN is back. This time Jerry Krasnick takes a swing at it. And so this
one, I know you're being sarcastic, but like, can we just go back to that little sentence that you just said? You really can't squeeze enough profiles of the man now that he's running the Marlins.
Honestly,
that's crazy. Nobody cares about the Marlins, as evidenced by the fact that we just talked about no one goes to their games. Their team is terrible. They have such a low payroll. Everyone's like, I don't even know why this team's in this city or this stadium. And yet ESPN's like, we got to give them the profile treatment. Every
honestly,
3 weeks.
Well, like, I think establishment, older establishment writers, like, love Jeter just because he played the game with grace. You know, he played the game the right way. And so now he is, now here he is running a baseball team and in some ways failing spectacularly at it. And so ESPN writers and other writers,
yeah,
I'm sure, just fair.
I don't know if that's fair.
What? Saying he's failing?
Not spectacularly.
All right. Well, his first moves of decimating the entire team didn't exactly go over so well. So,
not yet, but they wouldn't pay off even if they did go over well. Yeah.
All right. My point is more, I think a lot of people would like to see him succeed in spectacular fashion. And yeah, so far, the fruits have not been born yet. But that doesn't mean sure that we can try and pick his brain every couple months and see what he's up to.
Well, he's the CEO now. I don't know if you know this.
Is he the CEO?
He's not only the CEO, but he's being educated on how to be the CEO.
So here we go. The education of Derek Jeter, baseball CEO. this one, I don't think was as blatant as the Verducci piece. Like, this wasn't necessarily an ego stroke. I think that Jerry Krasnick was kind of genuinely curious how things are going.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we just don't really get an answer. Because I don't even think Derek Jeter could tell you what the hell's going on, you know?
It's just another sort of like meandering profile in and out about like what Jeter kind of does now that he's not just a former player. He's like something else. There's a part in the middle where it's like talking about the 32,000 foot square foot Tampa Manor that he lives in, dubbed St. Jetersburg. And I'm like, is that really about his CEO education? And
yeah, there's so much in here that's like, no detail is too small for Jeter. And I'm like, I would hope so. He's running a freaking baseball organization.
I think you could apply that
to every single baseball president.
This quote from him: while I was there around the minor league complex, I tried to learn as much as I possibly could about scouting and player development. I started saying it publicly about 10 years before I retired. I could never see myself coaching or managing or scouting. I'm like, what? He started to learn about how baseball operations are run. What did you start to learn? That's an interesting profile. Like, yeah, are you suddenly pro swing plane revolution because of something that some coach taught you in single A? Like, it talks more about him getting into the nitty gritty. And this is the same for the other profile that we talked, the Verducci one. He says more about how detail-oriented he is than he actually shows.
Yeah.
And like, you know, journalism 101, my guy. Show, don't tell.
It's, yeah, it's really strange. I mean, there's stuff in here about like the big bottle of hand sanitizer that was on his desk. And everyone thought that like that was his bottle. But like this profile makes sure to clarify that it was actually David Sampson's. So we've got that cleared up. It was not Jeter's bottle of hand sanitizer, in case that was still bugging
for?
You.
Who is that for? Who is that like fact
six,
for?
6 months later, the dispenser is history. The old black carpet has been replaced by a lush off-white, and the combination of overhead lighting and sun streaming through the front window gives Jeter's surroundings an eerily dreamlike quality.
Yeah. I think where the profile actually gets interesting in the middle there, and this kind of speaks to what you're talking about with where Jerry Krasnick was genuinely curious, is where it kind of switches to the, it's bolded, it says each day moves Jeter another step beyond the wave of missteps and self-inflicted wounds that put him in an early PR hole. So it talks about all the payroll slashing, and there's this paragraph which I think is actually really nice that says, after years of largely Teflon news coverage, everything stuck. Last time Jeter felt this besieged, he was making 56 errors in the Sally League in 1993. I think that's actually interesting. I think it's an interesting part of all of this is that he's gone his whole life never taking any shit, and now he's taking a ton of shit from baseball Twitter.
Yeah.
But just giving him kind of like tabla rasa to just say whatever he wants about that feeling is not interesting, I don't think. And it's like, it's a lot of media pandering that kind of happens when you have a guy who played the game the right way for 20 years or whatever.
Yeah. And there's this whole section in here about the community building that they want to do, right? And that's where the story about the Spanish language learning, that's where that story came from. And they, you know, they put a lot of lip service towards wanting to build trust with their fans, right? And that is commendable, certainly, but it doesn't really interrogate why they decided to tear the team down in the first place. I mean, he says that the bottom line is that we took over an organization that was broken. And I don't think that that's true. It was under poor management, but like, there was really nothing indicating that you had to sell off the entire team and gut the payroll, you know? Like the trust may have been broken in some sense, but what you really did was twist the knife rather than pull it out slowly. You know what I mean? And that's what this article can't even get at, is why he did that, why he felt the need to do that. And that's something that like Jeter himself only knows, right? I mean, maybe you really just wanted to save money that much, but like you had the best outfield in baseball and you got rid of it full stop, you know? And that's something you can build around. And instead you said, no, we need to tear it down to the very ground.
Yeah. This goes back to the conversation we had with Lindsay Adler. And I think some of the conversation we sort of had around that time between Just You and I, where my whole thing was like, if you don't have enough money to buy a baseball team and then run that baseball team like every other baseball team in the league, if the rub is that you have to buy the team, tear it down, spend a little bit of money until you recoup whatever debt you took on or whatever, then you shouldn't be buying a baseball team,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's my whole thing with like the Wilpons right now, is that if you don't have enough money to spend like a team in New York, then you should not have a team in New York.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Not a lot of stuff interrogates that, because that's a hard, not a lot of pieces, not a lot of conversation really interrogates that, because like, who am I to say what Derek Jeter's financial statements look like, or Bruce Sherman, who's the guy who also had a large part of that bid with Derek Jeter. And I just think it's a little bit like standing next to a guy at a baseball game and he elbows you and is like, have you heard of this guy, Derek Jeter? You know, that's the way I feel when I read these pieces. It's like, we know, guys, we know.
Yeah,
we know.
Yeah. He's running the Marlins. We get it.
You know how many times I've seen a Nike ad where he ranges to his right because he's too slow to get in front of the ball, and he backhands it and he jumps and he throws? I know. I get it. It's just ham-handed. It's a little ham-handed.
Yeah.
I'm not like, I don't want to crucify Jerry Krasnick or anything like that for this piece, because I don't think it was nearly as pandery as the other one that we talked about with Verducci, but I just feel like our man was in the news. And we've talked so positively about him that we just need to throw a little bone to our listeners who are ravenous to eat up Derek Jeter in the Marlins at any time.
he does have a good quote in here where he says, in my mind, baseball needs to cater to the younger demographic. It's not always about who wins, but the experience you have. Everything that happens in this park has to capture the energy, culture, and diversity of Miami. We're catering to that diversity, from the music to the food. And that's good for like an owner to come out and say that and be like, we really want to connect with the area that we are occupying, right? We want to connect with this community. That is absolutely commendable. And so I think that that's why we cover the stuff that the Marlins are doing, because we think it's important and other teams should follow in those footsteps to kind of try to forge a bond with your fans. I guess I don't think you always need to start from scratch to do it, but that's where we are.
I was just getting ready to say, like, there's no reason that that every time a baseball team does something good, it needs to be a phoenix rising from the ashes kind of situation. We can just make the decision to do good things, even if we're already good, you know?
Yeah, you can like, just get better Yankees, bit by bit.
The Yankees tomorrow could be like, oh, that thing that Jeter's doing in Miami, that's a good thing. We should make our English-speaking players learn Spanish. You know, they're a team that has just as much Spanish-speaking cultural influence in New York, in the Bronx, with a farm system full of players that they've scouted from South American countries. Like, there's no reason just because it's Miami and it's a weird
stadium and the team's relationship with the city is weird. There's no reason that they need to be the one to like take a drastic step. These aren't drastic steps. These are minuscule things that an organization could do that would make a lot of people in that organization's life easier.
Yeah. Real quick, before we move on, I just want to read this kicker real quick. It says that he arrives at the park early each day, rolls up the sleeves of those white dress shirts, and gets to work. Feel free to question his judgments and his decisions, but have no doubt about his mandate. He didn't come to Miami to lose. I'm like, oh boy, if you didn't come to Miami to lose, buddy, I got a real I got real bad news for you about the next few years.
You have 73 losses this year.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so Paul Ryan-y, is it not?
Yeah, it is.
Oh my God. He's a policy guy. Derek Jeter, yeah. A policy guy.
Oh my God. He totally is, yeah.
He's a wonk.
He's a wonk. All right, we got to stop talking about Derek Jeter. All right, y'all, we want to thank you for tuning in this week. You know that we love ranting about Derek Jeter profiles and bad rule changes. So if you have either of those that you want to send our way, please do so. If you've written your own Derek Jeter profile, we will do a dramatic reading of it live on the podcast.
I don't know what you're committing us to.
tippingpitchespod@gmail.com. If you want to get in touch with us about anything at all, please feel free to reach out. Our DMs are open as well. Bobby, you got anything else?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, we really appreciate anyone who's listening, especially this late in the pod. We said we would try to keep this one short. It's not really that short. But if you are listening this late in the pod, it means that you care a lot about it. And so I want to thank you for that. And maybe ask you to share it with someone else who feels the same way about baseball as you do. Because, you know, we've been doing this for a while now. We've been doing this for over a year. It'd be cool to meet some more people who think about baseball the way that we do. So if you have a friend who's looking for a baseball pod, think about us. Tell them to listen on Radio Public. Tell them to listen on Apple Podcasts. Tell them to listen on Overcast, Stitchers, whatever. Just not SoundCloud, because SoundCloud is not for podcasts. And yeah, we really appreciate any listening, any feedback, anything at all. So keep listening. Give us suggestions for stories. And yeah, enjoy the rest of the dog days of baseball.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in, y'all. We will see you next week. Derek Jeter shows up. He's like, all right, 5 straight 100-loss seasons. Let's do this, baby.
He comes to Miami. He's like, let's bleed this thing dry like a venture capital firm would do with a media organization. He's like twirling his mustache. Here I am, the benevolent billionaire, Derek Jeter, who wants to ruin my public image.
I don't really know how to transition from Hitler to anything, if I'm being quite honest.
That's because you shouldn't have to transition from Hitler to anything. You shouldn't talk about that. No, you don't need to do that.
What a fucking year, man.
I'm going to post that as the outro, the outtakes at the end.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to transition from Hitler to anything.